opinion isn't a 9-to-5 job. And Scott Radley is ready to go live and local with his. This is the Scott Radley Show on AM 900 CHML.
Welcome to the Scott Radley Show for this Thursday evening. Man, the week is moving along. Glad you are here. If you have been through a contentious divorce, child custody, lots of you have. I mean, many, many people in our world have been through this stuff. Those people who have been through that stuff have often talked about how the family law system is very difficult to navigate and, frankly, exhausts your resources in addition to your life. A lawyer from Toronto has done a lot of studying on this and a lot of speaking on the lack of, well, on the system itself and how just completely difficult it is to work through and how it takes so much out of the people who get into this system. We will chat about that and whether there's any way that this system could actually be fixed. For many of you who have been down this road, this is a challenge for sure.
I want it all.
Those words that Freddie Mercury was just singing have been said an awful lot in family court over the last number of years, over many years. Because if you've ever, and I haven't, thankfully, I'm blessed that way, but if you've ever been through a contentious divorce or a nasty child custody battle, you, I'm sure, can understand how cutthroat and just dirt down and dirty the family law world can be. And that's just emotionally. We're not even talking yet about the costs, although we're going to get there. There was a column in the National Post this week. Christy Blatchford, who's great, wrote this. How is it that these courts remain the expensive, convoluted, soul-crushing places they've become? And how is it that the players have allowed it to become normalized? It's a great series of questions right there. For anyone who's been through it, I am sure they've asked that very thing themselves. Well, one of the people that she quoted in her column was a lawyer out of Toronto. He's a lawyer. He is a legal educator. He has studied this. His name is Omar Haredi, and he joins me now. Omar, thanks for doing this tonight.
Scott, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's get right to that. When Christy describes that in the courts, is it really that bad for those who are in it?
I think, unfortunately, I have to say that for the vast majority of people in family courts, it is that bad, especially if there is contentious issues at stake, and if you have the wrong kind of lawyer. I think it's the wrong recipe for the wrong kind of disasters. And as a lawyer, I can say that we see members of the public whose lives are completely destroyed from family law proceedings, and it doesn't have to be that way.
All right, so the common, and again, I have not been through this, and I'm very thankful, but I know enough people who have, and they've told me, and I've sort of put together this mixed bag amalgam of their stories. It kind of goes like this. You've got the two combatants, and by the time they get to the court proceeding, they hate each other so much that they really don't want to back down from each other. But at a certain point, so they start fighting it, and at a certain point, they realize now they're in so deep. They've paid so much money now into fighting this that if they quit now and accept a settlement, well, now they've just thrown all their money away. So they have to keep. It's like a gambler. You have to keep pulling on the slot machine because you just can't quit because you now would have cost yourself so much money for no apparent reason, and eventually you just keep fighting until everybody has nothing left. I mean, is that reasonably close to a lot of these scenarios?
It's pretty reasonable. I think the important thing to emphasize, though, is that the vast majority of family law disputes don't even go to court. And so those are the smart people, if you will, those are the lucky people, because if someone else that you're in a relationship with drags you to court, you have no choice but to respond. So the smart people sort this out with the help of lawyers, but they sort it out outside of court through negotiations, reviewing documents and figuring out what's reasonable, and they can keep all the nasty emotions out of it.
Okay, but in the piece that that Christy wrote, you were quoted saying that 57% of people in family court are representing themselves because they've already run out of cash from paying their lawyers.
That's true. So that's the problem, is that once you hire a lawyer, we now know, unless you're very, very, very rich or extremely poor, so under $20,000 a year, you're not going to get a lawyer. So you're either going to have legal aid if you're very, very, very poor, or you have to be exceedingly rich, at least six figures or more, in order to afford the family law system. So you get to start out, you get to say some really, really nasty things, which you probably shouldn't say because it doesn't make a difference in law, but you get to say it. Probably have a lawyer who's not very good telling you to say it. And you go along, and before you even actually accomplish anything, before you even have a judge giving you an order and resolving anything, the majority of the middle-class Canadians are running out of money, and then they're stuck in these proceedings without a lawyer, without any money, and as you described, Scott, a really, really nasty situation where their ex-partner doesn't even want to talk to them.
Right, and now you're even madder now because you are blaming that person for costing you all the money you have.
You're blaming that person if they're the one who dragged you there, but, you know, I think this is where I'm trying to, as a lawyer, say we need to rethink the way we do everything. So part of the blame then turns on lawyers, and despite our bad reputation, the vast majority of us are very well-intentioned. We do want to help the public. We're not allowed to lie, or at least we're not supposed to. But we do know there's lawyers, and it happens in the family law bar, who act inappropriately and egg their clients on and promote this type of conflict because sometimes it lines their pockets a little bit more. So I think the words of advice I would have for anyone who's going to go through this is be reasonable and think about, do you want to start your life, your new life, if you're going through a divorce, taking that money and maybe buying a new house and putting something away for the kids, or do you just want to give it all away to the lawyer? Because, I mean, it helps us out. You know, thank you very much for all that extra money. But it's not really what's helping out the public. And this is the problem that we have in our courts today, is it's just really not helping the public in the problems that they have.
Omar, give me an idea, because again, for people who have never been through this, those who have, we're preaching to the choir on this one, but those who haven't, if I was to get into a family court situation for a divorce and a nasty divorce and a child custody, and I got the whole package coming together, what if it drags out for a while, what kind of money are we talking about now that it could run?
It does vary. Again, it could cost you as little as $5,000 if you avoid the whole situation, right? And so we're talking about once you get into court, I would say minimum $30,000 to $50,000. And if it drags on, you're getting into $100,000, $200,000. There are some cases which go well beyond that. We've seen $500,000 of legal fees alone. So just think about that, giving all that money to a lawyer. And the other side is doing the same thing. So, you know, throwing away basically your life and your kid's life, and maybe even your grandkid's life, because that's money that could have been invested to all of them.
All right, and you mentioned a moment ago, and this is kind of what the challenge is. And I don't want to—I'm not going to take a gratuitous shot at lawyers right now. A, because you were good enough to come on, and B, because my dad was a lawyer, so I'd get trouble back home someday if I do that. But it seems to me that the challenge here is that the system is set up that it is not in a lawyer's financial best interest to encourage you to settle. That may be the right thing to do. That may be the ethical thing to do, but that is certainly not allowing them to pay their bills and to make their money. So I'm wondering, I mean, from your experience, what percentage of lawyers immediately say, no, settle? And how many say, you know what, we probably should file a few things and drag this out for a little bit and make a little money and then we'll figure it out?
Yeah, I can't think of any family litigators. So those are the people who actually just exclusively do the family court stuff who would promote settlement up front. There's very, very few that would. That has to come from the public. And the problem is when you're going through an emotional breakup, you're going through a divorce, people aren't thinking about that. And they think about Hollywood, they think of the movies, and they want someone who is an angry, aggressive litigator. But that's exactly the opposite of what they want, even in court. So let's say you do have to go to court. Let's say there's a legitimate reason for doing it. Maybe there's some domestic violence there. You still don't want an aggressive, angry litigator. You want a problem solver. You want someone who's going to say, this is the best way to get to your plan B, to get to your new life, and let me figure out how we can do that.
But don't you, as a member of the bar, when you are called to the bar of the Law Society of Upper Canada, do you not have to take an oath at your graduation or when you're doing that that says, my job, my purpose is solely to serve the betterment of my client?
Well, that's a common misconception. So
okay, all right.
We do have to serve our client's interests, but we have a competing duty, and that duty is to the legal system and to ensure that the public perceives the legal system in a positive way. So that means we're supposed to conduct ourselves in a positive way as well. And we're unfortunately not seeing that because, as you've mentioned, there are lawyers who get away with this type of stuff, and they're never really held accountable because as soon as things get nasty enough or people run out of money, they dump the lawyer. They have no other choice.
So how then do we fix this? Because I know you've been outspoken. You have been someone who has actually been standing there saying this thing has to change. How do we do that? How do we do it, though?
there are so many changes that we could get through, Scott. I think part of it is going to be that we'll likely see, or hopefully we see in our lifetime, some of these family proceedings going to more of an arbitration or more of a tribunal-style proceeding. So instead of going to court, it'll be more like landlord-tenant board, where you can discuss parenting schedules, and doesn't have to be everyone all heated up, and they don't have to have lawyers. They can sort it out themselves. So that's part of it. There's other types of reforms where legal aid can be perhaps scaled back and only used where it needs to be used, because we know in some instances it's actually being used to fuel the conflict. So we have some cases where, like I said, one side will actually have legal aid because they're poor enough to have it. The other side isn't poor enough, and they get dragged through these very, very expensive proceedings, and they can't afford it to begin with. And then we can also look at other types of reforms, such as when it comes to kids, saying that, you know what, it shouldn't be about fighting over the kid to begin with. Both mothers and fathers have a place in children's lives, and that should be the starting point. So that would be what we call a presumption of joint custody. So men and women, we're all for equal gender, we're all for equal pay, we all want equality in all other aspects of our life. Why are we not doing that when it comes to parenting as well? And I think we need to move to that, not only as a society when we're raising kids, but also when it comes to the family breakdown in terms of the expectations, but also the responsibilities between the two parents.
And if I was to go into criminal court, not for a family matter, but if I was charged with a crime and I walk into criminal court and I plead guilty, often there will be some benefit to me as far as sentencing because I haven't dragged the court through the time and the money and everything else. There will often be a somewhat lesser sentence to me if I were to do that. Is there anything in the family law situation that says if you walk in here and if you offer to settle in front of the judge or even before then, there is a betterment for you to do that even if your other half says, no, I want to fight this thing through? Is there any advantage to me to doing that?
There are some newer developments in the family law. It's not necessarily settlement-oriented. It can be. You can provide a formal offer to settle, so you can say to the judge, we're trying to be reasonable. This is our position. We're trying to give them half of everything or an equal or fair portion of everything, whatever that everything might be. And if the judge agrees, that can have some very significant consequences down the road for the other party. So that's one of the measures that you can do, but that's still a very, very expensive proposition to get through all of that process.
Right, because even if I walk in there on day one and say, listen, I want to be reasonable, I want to settle this. If my spouse, who is divorcing me and wanting the kids, decides she or he wants to fight this thing tooth and nail, I'm kind of stuck in that, am I not?
You're stuck. This is part of the problem, is that you are stuck. We also have what's called summary judgment motions, which are relatively new in family law, so just a few years now. And they're what we call a mini trial. So let's say there really isn't anything to fight over. Pretty much everything has been resolved. You can just take it to this mini trial called a summary judgment motion and get the whole thing kicked out. So that's actually growing in use. It's, like I said, new in Ontario, and it's growing in use. And so more and more lawyers, at least the ones who are saying, look, this is your best option to get out of this ugly mess, they're relying on that mechanism.
Do judges ever intercede and say, listen, there is nothing here, just settle this and be done with it? Do they ever get that involved, or are they basically required to be in the background just saying, no, you do it and I'll just be here to decide what happens?
You know what, Scott? Every single day, in Ontario at least, every single day there are judges in every court, I can say that, in Ontario, that are telling the parties exactly that. They say, they shake their heads, and the judges, their hands are tied, right? They're stuck with the parties that come to court as well. And they say, you can sort this out. We shouldn't be fighting over what Billy is having for dinner when they're at mom's house. Or conversely, whether or not he should be wearing jeans or shorts. I mean, live and let be. This is just unnecessary. So the judges are trying to push for that. It's just their hands are tied and they only have so much power. Paradoxically, the judges don't have enough power to actually put an end to these things.
Last thing, we got to go, but let me ask you one more thing. As I say, and I want to make this very clear, because you have been someone who has publicly been arguing for changes, and I commend you for that, because I mean, clearly that is needed. Let me say, for example, we're in utopia land now, and you, Omar, are now lord and master of all legal creation, and you can change the system. What would be the first thing you would do to try and make this work if you could sweep your hand and make any big change?
I say this as a lawyer, obviously, and I say the first thing I would do was make sure that the parties didn't speak to a lawyer first. We're going to need lawyers so you understand your legal rights, but you probably need to talk to a sociologist, a psychologist, someone who is trained in some other type of science, who can help counsel the parties, diffuse the emotions, and sort out, like I said, what's going to be the next stage in their life. a lawyer isn't going to help you do that, or is not going to help you do that as well as some of those other professionals. And so I think it's us simply recognizing that we have our place and our role. It's not necessarily on the front line.
Omar Ha Radai, you can read what Christy wrote. Christy Blatchford of the National Post wrote about him. It's still on the website there. It's a really interesting piece. It's kind of depressing, quite honestly. But Omar, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
If you have been through something like this, and I bet you that there are 20%. Would 20% be too high? What's the divorce rate in this country now still? At one time, it was close to 50%. I'm saying at a low estimate, 20% of the people listening right now have probably ended up in family court for a divorce and or for child custody battles. And I bet you that of that 20%, and I could be very low on that one, it's probably a lot higher than that. I bet you that a fair number look at that system right now and say, man, did that ever just clean me out? By the time I was done, not only emotionally was I spent, but I had used up basically all the money I had just to fight. And in the end, what did I win? And you know, I was talking to someone, a friend of mine, a while ago, and that was basically the comment. Even at the end, if you win, you look back and you go, okay, wait a second. What did I just spend and what did I actually win? And could we not have resolved this months ago, years ago, tens of thousands of dollars ago, without having to go through this? And you know what the thing is that Omar just said, though, that is the truly disturbing part of this whole situation? Because I really believe that not everybody who gets into these situations is either out of control mad or a wingnut or somehow masochistic and wants to drain their bank account. The really scary thing that he pointed out there is that even if you are sensible, if you are reasonable, if you say, look, we can settle this, we don't have to go through and spend all of our money. But if your spouse, who you're now apart from, decides they are going to fight this thing right to the end, there is not much you can do about it. You can either roll over and give them everything they ask for, or you can fight it. There's got to be a better system, doesn't there? Now, I mean, if you can have two reasonable people, the system can work. But if you have one of the people who's not reasonable, it's a tough, tough, tough system. And it's a little depressing, I got to be honest with you, when you read these stories and you hear him. Quick break. Back after this with the quiz question on the Scott Radley Show. Stay with us.